Yeah, another Green Divas radio show. Hey, Lynn.
Hey, Green Diva Meg. How are you?
I'm great. I am.
Yay.
I'm great. You know, I don't know. Nothing too exciting to report here. It's not the same without Green Diva Lynn in the studio.
I know. I love being there. Makes such a difference.
It really does. It really does. But, you know, hey, we'll just have to make do for now in this virtual world with phones and computers, right?
I will close my eyes and pretend I'm there. But yeah. I am in most a good portion of this show today.
That's right, because you were with us when we recorded a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We had a really good feature interview with Ken Cook.
Oh, I loved being able to talk to him. That was great.
Isn't he a nice guy?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just very accessible and fun and just a good spirited soul. But, you know, we talked about that new food app. What is it? Food Score?
Food Scores, yeah.
What a great idea. And I started playing with it immediately. And he and I were, like, having some kind of weird, like, same vibe thing.
Oh, yeah, talking about Doritos.
I don't know what possessed me because I have not, like, purchased Doritos. I'm sure I've put one in my mouth. But, you know, it just – I thought, let me just for fun see what Doritos says, you know, because I knew it was, like, a brand in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What does that say, that the brand is still there?
It made the food app explode, didn't it?
That's what he was saying. So anyway, that'll be an interesting one to learn more about that from him in our conversation. We had a special on My Earth 360.
With Climate Mama.
Climate Mama.
It was so great to finally meet her in person instead of just talking to her on the phone.
I'm just amazed because I really thought you guys were buddies. I'm sure that you had met here before.
No,
or
never
somehow.
Met before. That was the first time.
Don't you love that?
I do.
Talking about our
It
virtual
feels like I've known her for years.
Well, that's how you and I are.
I know.
You know, I love it. And then we did a health and beauty segment with Julie Wallers, and she's a contributor to Organic Lifestyle magazine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about, you know, she had a diagnosis of MS and how she has really dealt with that and turned things around for herself. So that'll definitely be an interesting one.
Yeah, that was a great conversation.
And, you know, we just got the same old fun stuff going on, you know.
Well, don't forget Rob Greenfield.
Oh, my gosh. I did forget Rob Greenfield, and
not on purpose.
How could anybody forget Rob?
Mr. Dumpster Diver.
And he's such a great guy. Boy, and he's...
That was the conversation I did miss out on, so I can't wait to hear it.
Did miss out on that, and he's out there trying to help, you know, raise awareness for food waste.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an interesting angle, and that is that, like, unbelievable amounts of food is thrown away every day in dumpsters behind supermarkets, and, like, 90% of it is completely fine. So
yeah, he's dived into, or dove, I'm not really sure what the right word would be for that,
I have to look
into over 1,000 dumpsters in 25 states across America.
Yeah, and so he does dumpster diving sort of events and communities, and everybody gets involved and they put it all together in the middle of an area, designated area. And obviously in certain areas, they invite people to come take the food because, you know, otherwise it's going to get wasted. And there are people who are hungry.
Right.
So he's got a lot.
1 in 7 Americans are fighting for their next meal, as a matter of fact.
As a matter of fact, Lynn has that on her fingertips. You're amazing, Green Diva Lynn.
Oh, my gosh. Can I tell you, I amaze myself.
Well, we're still having fun with our fundraising campaign. And really, I want to encourage you folks, we have new stuff that we're giving away. Not giving away. If you contribute, we got swag for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some new stuff, including those videos, I think, from John Kelly.
Right. The videos on Antarctica Challenge.
Those, by the way, were on the when we were here, and we kept looking at the boxes, and we just walked by them.
Mm-hmm.
The whole week, we're like, okay, we'll get to that later, because sitting on the front porch. Anyway,
thanks for reminding me. I have to add those to the
to
our fundraiser website, along with another Hawaii package, like a 2-night stay at the Hawaiian Island Retreat at a really
Oh, seriously,
price.
People? That, I'm telling you, you want that.
I want
that. I also want one of those videos, so I think I'm going to have to contribute.
There you go.
So please consider a contribution. We do have apps now for the GDGD Radio Network.
I know, that's so exciting.
On almost every smartphone platform, except for iTunes, which is in the process. So it's just, I think they are just backlogged because they have a lot of submissions. That's what I'm being told. But we're on Google Play, we're on Microsoft, we're on BlackBerry, CrackBerry, Android. Yeah, you name it, we're on it. I got to mention our fabulous buygreen.com, which is the most trusted source for green and healthy living products for home and family and office.
And right on, and you can access it through our website, thegreendivas.com/marketplace, and then you'll see their banner right there. Click on it, boom, go shopping.
Be there or be square, and stay tuned because we have a lot of great stuff in this show. Okay, people, carry on.
We've seen the images, Arctic wildlife that are not surrounded by ice, but an ever-increasing amount of water. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
With the increase of global warming, 17 animals are now on the endangered species list. For one reason, the loss of their Arctic habitat. The Arctic sea ice has fallen to its lowest levels in 6 years, affecting the wildlife that lives there. Polar bears, whales, walruses, muskox, and the newly added to the list, Arctic fox, are struggling to adjust to climate change. And if they are, that means we will too. The ecosystem of the world is something we have to live within and cannot live without. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Overwhelmed by environmental news? Listen to the Green Divas My Earth 360 Report for the latest eco-news bits from around the globe, carefully curated and borne by our need to say, WTF! But we also love to share encouraging stories and, of course, ways that you can make your voice count for the Earth. It's not just my Earth, it's our Earth, and together we can make a difference. Oh, a special happy day in the Green Diva studio, because not only do we have Green Diva Lynn, the crowd
Yay
cheers,
for me.
In from Chicago, we also have our very favorite climate mama, Harriet Sugarman.
Yay!
And we're
three
all
cheers.
Three.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Three Green Divas in one room. Watch out, people.
Look out.
All in the same room. So, yeah, we're going to bust open this topic of the Keystone XL nightmare. Right. And I know Harriet.
The pipeline
is
from hell.
The pipeline from hell.
It is, although it's from Alberta, where I'm originally from. So.
Well,
okay, no, it's not from hell.
To Alberta.
No, no. So it's not from hell. It's just going
about
to
that.
It's going to hell. There you go.
In a handbasket.
Yeah, it keeps coming back. We talk about it like the Hydra. You know, you chop off one head and it tries to come back in many different ways with many more heads. Yeah.
So, Harriet, you just came from a rally last night out in the cold.
I did.
Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. You know what? This is pipeline started 3.5 years ago in terms of the protests against it, because it seemed like it was going to be a done deal. It was going to happen. It's been in the works for 6 years. And you know what? Through public pressure and through a lot of people coming out and saying this is just the wrong idea at the wrong time and for the wrong reasons, it's really been stalled. And President Obama's continued to say we need to wait for the full report to come out from the State Department. We're waiting for a report from Nebraska because it's going over a sensitive aquifer there. The Supreme Court in Nebraska actually punted on this in that they didn't deal with it, just said it, or they said it would be okay to move forward. And so by doing that, it emboldened, again, our new Congress when they came in. And in fact, they made it the first order of business, which is crazy.
Did they end up staying up all last night?
No. So, well, they're discussing it, and it could go on. We thought initially that the Senate would decide by Friday. Last week, the Congress pushed through a bill saying that we should move forward with building this, and now we're waiting for the Senate to go through. We don't think there'll be a veto majority. They need four more votes, which we don't think is going to happen, but they're discussing it. They're calling it SB1, the Senate Bill Number 1, and is that... You know, the
Well, now Obama says that he'll veto it.
He said he's going to veto it. Absolutely. And we want to hold him to that. Yes. And that's what these rallies yesterday were all about, was to try to show that there's public support around the country, that we've got your back. We support your decision to veto this, and that this is the, again, not something we should be moving forward with. We need a lot of infrastructure projects in the country that'll put our roads back together, our bridges. We don't need a pipeline.
Weren't there reports recently that the pipeline has not created more jobs in Canada as they suspected it might, and that indeed there's more jobs being created in the renewable energy sector?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. We see that there are many more jobs that are being created in Canada in the renewable energy sector than through the oil and gas industry. And, you know, there's estimates that this will create anywhere from 75 to 42,000. 75 is a weird range. 50 that the State Department report said. And when you go on the big end, it's 42,000. But again, how many thousands and thousands of people could we put to, you know, to work if we started repairing our roads, building our bridges, and doing many other things. So, you know, we don't even need this. We are trying to move to renewables in this country. We're trying to get away from pipelines.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do renewables.
Should we just let people know, because there may be somebody out there that doesn't really know what the Keystone XL pipeline actually is. We kind of alluded to the fact that it's probably an oil, you know, it's supposed to carry oil from Alberta, Canada, down to where?
Down to Texas. And then it would be refined. And then sent to international markets. So it's a pipeline, as Elizabeth Warren, who's one of my... recently said, you know, the first thing that we're doing is to help a bunch of paid lobbyists promote a pipeline that will embolden, you know, another government, not our own, and enrich oil companies.
And probably leak along the way.
Exactly. Well, so it goes all the way from northern Alberta to Texas to refineries to be sent overseas. And it's not oil, as President Obama has said, that's even coming to the American public. It doesn't do anything for our gas prices, for our heating oil. It doesn't do anything for us.
So it's sort of a boondoggle. And do you think it's just becoming this political football, and it's, you know, it's the Republicans sink their teeth into this concept and bang against bang the drum for, you know, oil, big oil.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what I think the positive thing about this pipeline, in a way, that it has put pipelines and infrastructure on the map on many people's attention. So there are a lot of gas pipelines coming through in many people's backyards all around the country. And by this fight, we've been able to put that pipeline fights on the map. And so whether it ultimately goes through, you know, there's ideas that it could be the last big oil pipeline that's ever built in this country. We hope it won't even get built. But what it's done, it's emboldened activists, and activists being parents and teachers and mothers and fathers and people that are just like all of us, to actually say, you know, this is the wrong direction. We don't want fossil fuel infrastructure built in our backyard or anywhere in
especially
our country.
Especially when we're exporting it.
Right.
I mean, not that we'd want it anyway, but it just makes
sense.
I would
rather have like a, you know, a highway lined with solar panels and windmills. Wouldn't you know, really, seriously.
And a lot of plants and trees.
You have, and I love that there's all these cute little memes about, you know, you never heard of any damage from a solar spill.
Right. It's so true. And it's so damaging, the spills from pipelines. They leak much more oil than any barges, than trucks, than anything. When there is a spill, it's really damaging. And the crazy thing, it goes to refineries that are in the Gulf, that are on the front line of sea level rise and potentially hurricanes. So, we're creating an infrastructure leading to places that could end up be, you know, destroyed because of what it's transporting. It's all just
Yeah, it's kind of circular there, right?
Yeah,
climate change could destroy the whole infrastructure in the end. Well, that would be poetic justice if it happened. Oh. But you started to mention something else interesting that you wanted to get us get on our radar before we started.
Oh, sure. You know what? So today, the Obama administration announced draft methane regulations. And so, you know, we've been talking about, and you've talked about it on your show, about the standards for new and existing power plants in terms of carbon emission standards. So there was discussion that there must also be at the same time a way to lower methane emissions. So they've just put out new regulations.
They stop cows from farting?
Yeah, exactly. I think this one is technically.
People do it too.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe on a lower level.
I'm guilty.
Yeah. These regs are strictly to the oil and gas industry, although maybe the next step will be to those factory
regulating
farms.
Those
different
cows.
Kind of gas.
Yeah. But they don't apply to existing infrastructure. So in my mind, that's
a lot
like
of grandfather
which
stuff.
Is all falling apart.
Which is not only falling apart, but there's a lot of leaks. They're really leaky.
Right.
There's a lot of compressor stations and
those are the things that need it the most.
Right.
I mean, that's what, you know, come on. You know, seriously. Right. Oh, that's annoying.
So that's annoying. And it's annoying.
That's one word for it.
Yeah, that they're using 2012 as the level for emissions. But what kind of where are they starting with? What's the base? You know, there's a lot of discussion in scientific community that we're not accurately measuring actually what the leaks are now. So how are they establishing that? So it's a good first start. You know, it's a good step in the right direction. But shouldn't we just be transitioning, boom, to those solar roadways and windmills and forget about trying to allow the industry to continue to build out? So you'll see a lot of positive stuff in the news about it. But I hope that people actually look at it carefully.
Well, tell us where we can go to find out some information and maybe you know, take some action on this.
I think that, you know, in paper, in your local newspaper and things in the next few days, it was a big deal that this announcement just at noon today. So,
well,
just,
I know Lynn will find
some. Do you have
some...
a post in you anywhere that you could write for us?
Yeah,
potentially?
Absolutely. Yes.
Is there a post lurking there in
there? There is a post
I
lurking.
Feel a post coming up.
Yes, there is. Absolutely.
Well, I hate to do this to us because we could talk all day with Harriet. She's so wonderful and full of great information.
And it's so great to finally meet you in person.
And don't you feel motivated when she's here? Like, I want to go out and grab a sign and start running down the street screaming, you know,
and
stop farting. Yeah. No. Just kidding.
We could do that right here. Right after we shut things down, we'll just go out there and do it right here in Boonton.
But seriously, Harriet is very inspiring for me.
Thank you very much.
To take action, and she's...
Right. Well, I think that we all can make a difference when we do. And I think that by standing out there with our signs for Keystone or for whatever pipeline or compressor station, it makes people pay attention and listen and figure out, you know, what are we doing?
So you'll come back soon, I hope, Harriet.
I will for sure.
Okay.
Yay. Yeah. Yay. Thanks, everybody. Stay tuned. More coming. Get all the details from this Green Diva's My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com and myearth360.com. Vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Diva's health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle. Excellent. I'm really interested to talk to Julie today. We're doing this health and beauty segment with a woman named Julie Wallers, who is really doing a wonderful job healing without the use of the medical community. She is a writer with Organic Lifestyle magazine, and I'm just going to jump into it because I really want her to talk a bit about how this all evolved. And hi, Julie.
Hi,
Julie.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to hear how you're doing, and I think the topic is generally sort of clean beauty. And how you have changed your life after a diagnosis. So tell us a bit about that.
Okay. So about 10 months ago, I was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis.
Wow.
And I was really taken aback because I thought I was healthy. I really thought I was healthy. I exercised all the time, and, you know, I always chose the low-fat options when they were available. Mm-hmm. But I realized after being diagnosed that I wasn't healthy. So the medical community really didn't have any answers for me. They were really telling me to plan my disability.
Wow. Yeah, that's sort of a bummer.
Yeah, and they were saying you have to be on these. They prescribed 9 different medications for me.
9? 9. To take all at one time?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
my gosh.
Throughout the day. Like, so I was taking them more than once a day.
Whoa.
Yeah. So soon after that, I just reached out to an old friend of mine, Michael Edwards, who is actually the founder of Organic Lifestyle Magazine. And he connected me to the magazine, and I started reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I started reading articles about changing the way I eat, changing, you know, my beauty products, eliminating chemicals from my beauty regimen.
Right.
So over the last 10 months, I've been doing that. Mm. So now I eat probably 80% raw.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big change, and I think I've never heard that it hurt anybody.
No.
And have you noticed a difference?
Well, a huge difference. I've been an asthmatic my whole life since I can remember.
Mm.
So once I moved to raw organic produce, mostly vegetables, some fruit, my asthma was just evaporated. I no longer have to take any medication for asthma. I used to have debilitating migraines. That went away.
Really?
Yeah. And the last thing that I gave up was the preventative medication that I was supposed to be on the rest of my life.
Wow.
For MS.
And how?
I haven't been on that since November.
So what do your doctors say to you about all this?
They are saying you're better.
You're like, are they asking you, like, how you did it? Are they amazed or... are they casual?
Well, my neurologist first said when I went into him and I said, hey, I've been doing some research and, you know, I think that, you know, eating, you know, eliminating meat and dairy and, you know, processed foods from my diet and gluten, maybe that can help my MS symptoms. And he goes, there's no connection.
There's
no
really?
Connection between diet and your MS symptoms.
And you're like, hello.
I looked at him and said, that doesn't even make any sense.
Right.
It doesn't even make any sense. So I did it anyway.
Did he say that with a straight face?
Well, he believes it. He probably believes
that. And then he said, you know, the medication he prescribed for me, when they realized that it was can be used for MS, they took it off the market and increased the price from $3,000 a month or a year, $3,000 a year to $30,000.
What in the world?
Yeah. And then they put it back on the market.
Oh, that's just wrong.
$30,000 a year to take that chemical.
Thank God you don't need it now.
I know, right? Yeah.
So you're feeling...
The cool thing, really, is that my skin has just... it just glows. You know, I live in Germany, and I walk down to this little market where I get my free-range eggs, my organic eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me, and they said... you're glowing. Your skin is glowing.
Oh,
you know, what do you use on your face? And I had just rolled out of bed. I'd like brushed my teeth, washed my face with water, and ran to the bakery to get my eggs. And I looked and I was like, well, you know, I use some organic coconut oil occasionally on my face. But it was nothing. It was just my face. And then I talked to him about, oh, well, I've been eating raw produce and, you know. I go into the spiel.
Yeah.
But,
great.
It really done wonders for me. I am so happy that I found, you know, this Michael. First of all, Michael showed me.
Oh, yeah, we love Michael.
Organic Lifestyle Magazine.
Well, I'm really excited for you, and I'm hoping that you'll talk to us periodically and tell us how things are going. And as things progress, and you're going to learn more along the way, because we all do. And so you'll keep us informed and keep up the good work. Keep glowing.
Thanks so much, Julie. Great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy, green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, I'm so glad we caught up to this awesome green dude, Rob Greenfield, who's been making his way across the country, around the world, as a matter of fact. He's always on an adventure. He actually calls himself an American adventurer, and I think that's an accurate term. He's also a dude making a difference, an environmental activist, among many cool things. Hi, Rob.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So he's out in San Diego, so we were chatting about that because I've got peeps out there, and we spend time out there, so it's morning time where he is. So, you know, Rob, you are a young guy on a mission to help raise awareness about so many issues relating to the environment and food and water and resources. And I think there was a particular issue we were going to talk about today, which, as I said, I think we could talk about all day long and people still wouldn't entirely get it, and that is food waste.
Yes, food waste.
Food waste. And my dog just said, yeah, food waste. There should be none.
Although technically we should say wasted food.
Yes.
Because it's not really food waste. We're talking about throwing away so much good quality stuff that's just, it's just wasted food, food yes. that should be eaten.
Right, right, exactly. So tell me a little bit about how you kind of got focused on this and what you've been doing around it.
Well, the summer before, I took my first bike ride across the country, and I was doing this trip called Off the Grid Across America. And the idea was I was basically living, like you've seen the documentary No Impact Man, probably.
Yes, right.
So kind of like that, except it's a living extremely low impact. So the rule for food was I could only eat local, organic, unpackaged food.
Wow.
And since America's covered in food deserts and literal deserts,
yeah,
my exception to that was I could eat food that was going to waste because it has no negative environmental impact. The water's already been used, the electricity, the fossil fuels. So I started to look into grocery store dumpsters, and I was just blown away from day one. It seemed like just about every grocery store dumpster I opened was full of perfectly good food, and a lot of them were literally filled to the brim.
Yeah.
So on that trip, I ended up eating 70% of my diet came from grocery store dumpsters, about 280 pounds of food throughout the 3 months crossing America on my bike.
Wow. You know, and I know my sister drives to South Dakota every year, and there's all kinds of farms, you know, out there, you know, and yet there's very little. She's you know, pretty much a natural foodie like many of us, and she can't find food.
Yeah, I had a really hard time finding local food. And it's especially challenging for a traveler because the truth is we could all live fairly sustainably if we wanted to
yeah.
grow our own food if we made that choice. But as a traveler, you yeah. know, the farmer's market might just be once a week or
right.
you don't know where people are growing food, so it's much more difficult. So it was challenging. But so I just started to see firsthand how much food is going to waste, and the statistics are insane. $165 billion with a B worth of food is thrown away per year. And the thing is, these are just numbers, so it's hard to wrap your head around them. But to give you an idea of, to give the listener an idea how much $165 billion is, that's more than the budgets for our national parks, our public libraries, our federal prisons, the veterans' health care, the FBI, and the FDA combined.
Oh,
so
my
it is a lot.
God. Thank you for putting that into perspective, because you're right. It is hard to kind of visualize and get a grasp on that. And that's a lot. Holy
a
moly.
Lot. And then to continue that, to create just the amount of food that ends up in the landfills, we waste enough water to meet the domestic needs of every American citizen. So just the amount of food we waste, the water we waste growing that, would be all the water we need. So tons of resources. And then beyond that, so there's the environmental and the economic reason, but the humanitarian reason, of our 317 million Americans, about 50 million are food insecure.
Yeah.
Yet we produce enough food to feed 500 to 600 million Americans. So no food shortage whatsoever. We just need to get this food that's being thrown out into the hands and the mouths of the people who need it rather than in the dumpsters.
It's like not distributed properly. And yeah, there's something really, really wrong. That's an imbalance that we have to totally fix and focus on, people. Come on.
Huge. So people that want to see photos of what I've – so what I started to do was on the second bike ride is I biked across the country, and for the second half, I decided that I would only eat food from grocery store dumpsters to show how much of it there is. And so for 2 months, I ate a pure dumpster diet.
I know. Also, I remember seeing pictures. I'm like, oh, Rob. And so when Lynn said, oh, you're going to talk to Rob, I'm like, oh, the guy in the dumpster?
Yeah, people know me in the dumpster. That was never my original plan, was to be known for being a guy in dumpsters, but that's just kind of how it's come.
But it makes a really strong point. I mean, it really is pretty impactful.
It is. And so what's really been impactful is what I call the food waste fiascos, and that's where I go out for one night in a city with someone with a car, and we collect as much food as we can from the grocery store dumpsters in one night, and then the next day we've set up in a public park a food waste fiasco, which is where we lay out like a couple $1,000s worth of perfectly good food, and then we display it, and then people can come and take it. And I found that the only thing that's ever limited the size of the food waste fiasco
is the size of the car.
Exactly. Yeah. There's so much food.
Yeah, I was thinking like you couldn't do it in New York City without a very large truck.
Yeah, well, so in New York City, we did do it downtown right next to the Whole Foods Market.
Really?
I can't think of what name of that park is.
Union Square?
Yeah. Union Square.
That's where they usually have a huge farmer's market there in the middle, but there's a good...
Yep, we were down there, and I went out with the Freegans, actually. Their website's freegan.info.
Yeah.
They showed me how to dumpster dive in New York, and there it's not actually dumpster diving. It's like trash bag opening because the bags are, you know, just on the street.
Yeah.
So that's one place where dumpster diving is 100% legal, because once the stuff is on the street, it's public property.
Wow. Interesting. So, you know, if you happen to be homeless in New York, which is a huge bummer, especially in the winter, at least you're going to be well fed.
If you have some knowledge, you will absolutely be well fed. In fact, I would say that you could be more well fed than most poor college students.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the poor college students could be doing this as well, but a lot of people just don't know. But I've showed so many people. My mission isn't to get people dumpster diving, but while the food is there, I say why not? And, you know, at the same time, use it as a way to raise awareness.
Well, I like that you gather it and bring it to a public place and let people know, A, here's a visual, and B, here's some food for y'all, you know, because there are hungry people.
Oh, there's a lot of them out there, and it's pretty amazing to see. I've hosted 10 of these food waste fiascos. Each one had a couple $1,000s of the food, and pretty much every loaf of bread has been eaten at all of them.
Wow. Like
about $12,000 of the food just laid out between all of them, and people have come and gotten almost every bit of it.
Are you going to continue to do these?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing is, they cost no money. They take basically no resources, no infrastructure. You just go out, gather a whole bunch of food, which is friggin' fun. And then you blow people's minds with how much food is in their local dumpsters.
Okay, so I vote that we have to do that here in New Jersey, where we are in Morris County. We have to plan one of those.
All right, we can definitely do that.
Because there's a lot of kind of upscale communities here with upscale grocery stores that have some pretty sweet, you know, food in their dumpsters. Trust me.
Yes, upscale ones are definitely the the easiest.
Okay, question. Part. When you're in a city environment like, let's say, New York, what about the rats? Do they have, like, you have to fight the rats for the food?
So the only place that really, you know, so in all the dumpsters that I've been in, I've only ever seen rats once. It was here in San Diego, and it was at a Mediterranean market.
Bummer.
So the deal is that these grocery store dumpsters are emptied, most of them on a daily basis. And the reason being is because these guys are filling their dumpsters to the brim every single day. So they have to be emptied every single day. So there's not much time for rats to start festering. And then beyond that, dumpsters...
they're pretty sealed, right, most of them?
They're really... Well, even if they're not sealed, the sides... So it's one thing if they're, like, jammed up next to buildings like they are in New York City.
Yeah.
But in most cities where there's plenty of space, the dumpsters are standalone. There's just the sheer walls. There's nothing to climb up, so rats can't even actually get in the dumpster. So I would say I've never been in a dumpster with a rat.
Well, good to know.
Thousand dumpsters. Yeah, it is. And there's all these misconceptions about the dumpsters being crazy dirty or having rats. But the fact is that they're empty daily and that grocery stores aren't throwing away weird stuff. They're throwing away food, boxes, and plastic.
I just saw a film, the name of which I can't remember, but they actually had a whole scene about this issue. These lost boys from Sudan had been, you know, relocated here in the United States, and one of them got a job working in a supermarket, and the supermarket manager asked him to go throw, you know, like heartfuls of perfectly good food into the dumpster, and he was like flabbergasted, like, why? Why are you throwing, like, you know, there are people starving in my country. This is, you know, he actually just took off his little work vest, handed it to the manager, and walked away. So I can't do this.
Yeah. I'd love to have been there for that.
Well, it's a film, if I could remember it, Reese Witherspoon was in it, and it's a really, really good story. But anyway, I digress. So people find out more about you and your adventures and this food waste fiasco?
So the link to this, so the food waste fiasco is robgreenfield.tv/foodwaste, and you'll learn it all there, see the pictures. If you spend 10 minutes reading that blog, you'll be pretty well educated. You'll learn that grocery stores are protected by the Good Samaritan Food Act, so they don't have to worry about liability. And in fact, not a single grocery store has ever been sued, according to a 2013 University of Arkansas study. So, and then the fact that there's thousands of food rescue programs like City Harvest, Feeding America, the Food Recovery Network that will come to the grocery stores and pick this up. And so the call to action is donate, not dump. I want people out there getting involved with the grocery stores and telling them, hey, we want you to donate your extra food, not throw it away. And so using the hashtag donate, not dump on social media, or just go talk to your managers.
Oh, I like that. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go talk to my local manager and say, hey, by the way, what do you do with that stuff every day?
And you know what's so cool about that is you could inspire them to start donating it, and your simple action could feed hundreds of people every day.
All right.
How good would that feel?
It does feel good, and I appreciate your, you know, really making an effort to educate us on this stuff, because, you know, it's not in the forefront of our minds. I try to be very conscientious about food waste in my household and, you know, when I'm buying and all that stuff, and I try to buy local. But some of the things you've said are just stunning and are going to really shift my focus a bit. So, Rob, I'm glad we caught up to you, busy adventure man. And when you come out to the East Coast, we got to make sure you come to the Green Diva studio. And in the meantime, I hope we get to talk to you again soon.
All right. We will make a plan of a food waste fiasco at the Green Diva studio.
Definitely. All right. Bye, Rob. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Have a good day, everyone.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Enjoy. I'm excited again to be speaking to Ken Cook, who is the president and co-founder of one of our favorite organizations that we reference almost every show,
yeah,
right, Lynn?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, EWG, which for those of you who don't know, is Environmental Working Group. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you? I'm so glad to be amongst the Green Divas again.
And you're a green dude, so hey, this is a great thing.
Yeah, or Green Devo. We have some people now wanting to call our Green Dudes Green Devos. You know, you have to pick which one makes you feel best. But
you know, I'm whatever works, I'm in favor of.
Okay.
So, you know, you guys are always, I mean, the databases that Environmental Working Group that you all put together, there's so much research and good information that we reference all the time, and we ask people to go there frequently, and we link to it all the time. So now you have this app, this Food Scores app. So instead of me having to necessarily call up one of your wonderful databases and flip through it while I'm standing in the supermarket, which I've done before, by the way, now we have this fantastic Food Scores app, which I was playing with it, and it quickly will take a barcode using your smartphone and research the database instantly to see. And so tell us a bit about what Food Scores is and how we can all use it.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the program. I'm thrilled myself. And we really just deeply value people who follow these issues with the depth and the integrity that you follow them, because we're really in the business at the Environmental Working Group of making sure that consumers have the facts at their fingertips that our scientists feel are critically important for them to make the healthiest choices they can for themselves and their family. And, of course, we've got a whole series of databases on our website, some of which before this did have apps, for example, Skin Deep.
Right.
Our database of personal care product ingredients, we rate something like 78,000, I think, at this point, different products, and that includes thousands of ingredients and many hundreds of brands. And as with Food Scores, you can go and scan a product with the camera in your smartphone, and whether it's an Apple product or an Android phone, you can get the score right there at point of purchase or as you're shopping, roving the aisles looking for things that you feel will pass our test. Well, we decided we needed to do a Skin Deep for food.
Yeah.
We decided that we get so many questions from people about all the stuff that's in food these days and has been in for many years, and questions about nutrition, questions about contaminants. So our first step was to assemble a big database that contains at this point over 80,000 food products that you would find in your grocery store. We don't include restaurant foods. We include foods from almost every aisle.
Wow.
There are a few blank spots or blind spots for some product categories. For example, if you're in the produce aisle and you buy a bagged item, apples, for example, or celery or loose lettuce that's been pre-wrapped, that'll show up. But if you buy, you know, just a couple of apples that are in the bin, we won't have a universal product code or a database entry for that.
Right.
But and there are a few other exceptions like that. But by and large, even with a lot of prepared foods, we do have data from various.
Oh yeah, you do
stores.
Because I looked up Brad's kale chips, and they came up, and I was like, I didn't even know if that might be regional. I just wasn't sure. But yeah.
Well, it's a big data set, not complete. There are tens of thousands, but It's a good start, and what we wanted to do was rate these foods in different ways. So we looked at their nutritional value. That's the main basis for our score. We looked at health concerns about ingredients, and that's everything from additives, colorings, preservatives, and so forth. Then we also looked at contaminants, things that end up in food unintentionally in most cases or unavoidably, mercury in tuna, arsenic in rice, BPA in canned foods, and so forth.
Oh, Lord.
And we developed a very sophisticated scoring system, which we lay out, which a lot of websites that do this kind of rating of consumer products don't. But we really pride ourselves on being completely transparent on how we reach scoring decisions.
Well, I think it's incredibly important and helpful. And you have, it's like NIP. NIP, I think, right? Nutrition, ingredients, and processing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's been wonderful. We found out that, you know, the average food and food scores has 14 ingredients. It has a 58% chance of containing added sugar. It's got a 46% chance of containing an artificial or natural flavor, although natural often means anything but natural.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's valuable both for consumers looking at specific foods or categories to shop smarter, shop for cleaner foods with fewer ingredients, but it's also good from a research standpoint for us and for others to be able to look at the foods in aggregate and go through and ask questions. I asked a question the other day, okay, how many ingredients on average are in foods that have an organic certification in our database?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Conventional. And it turned out that overall, something like 14 ingredients, as I mentioned, in the average food, and then in organic, it's only 9.
Huh, okay.
So there's no requirement that organic food have fewer ingredients. That's not really part of the organic standard. There are thousands of ingredients that cannot be used in organic food.
Yeah.
They're prohibited. But the interesting thing to me was that it turned out that category by category, organic food companies consistently add fewer and have fewer ingredients in their products. So just right there, you're getting a sense that there's a divide in the food system, as it were, that shoppers can think through and maybe take advantage of if that's of interest.
Wow. So along with, you know, creating the app and all of the research you're doing, you're gathering this other data that obviously is going to start telling a story. It's already telling a story because you're saying that organic food, for no particular reason, it's not that they're required, but they appear to use less ingredients, which, you know, does kind of make sense because it seems to me that things that are more naturally less processed or the way that they're produced more naturally and organically sincerely, you know, just don't use all these extra things. They're just more whole, healthy foods.
That's right. I mean, many ingredients, as I say, you know, there are thousands that are approved for conventional food that cannot be used in organic. But I was really impressed. And, you know, I guess it's in part because I know a lot of people who work in the organic food business, both the growers for the fresh market, growing farm level products, livestock, crops, and so forth, but also a number of people who work in great companies like Amy's Kitchen or Annie's or Stonyfield or Organic Valley. As you get to know these folks and their philosophy, you can see why they may be allowed to use more ingredients than they do, but they really do try not to.
Yeah.
And so I think that tells you a lot about the integrity, in my view, of the organic system. But it also it gives consumers a window on the possibilities, right? I mean, you could make a conventional food product that didn't have organic ingredients with fewer ingredients, fewer additives, fewer colorings and preservatives and so forth. And I think that's the way the food system actually is starting to move, and we're excited about that. We think this food scores database and the app that you can use as you shop your way through the aisles at the grocery store, we think that can help contribute to that awareness that will send a signal back to manufacturers.
Oh, definitely.
And we'll end up, we hope, with a food that's got fewer artificial ingredients
in it. It's helping to create that transparency. Because it is difficult as a consumer to remember all the names of things and what is it I'm supposed to be looking for, not looking for.
Goodness.
And
that's
it makes
right.
grocery shopping take 3 times longer if you have to sit there and stare at a label for each and everything you buy.
The names, right?
Yeah.
The ingredients. And then there are, you know, sort of classic things. Like if you want to find out which foods have, you know, excessive sugar in them, added sugar that's, you know, that might be worrisome. So just a quick look through the database shows you that crackers have 63% of them have added sugars in crackers. Peanut butter, 68%. Salad
ketchup.
Dressings, 86%. Stuffing mixes, we just finished the holiday seasons, right? Thanksgiving and Christmas. These stuffing mixes, 100% of the ones in our database, and we have quite a few, 100% have added sugar.
Wow.
So,
weird.
You know, again, the concern of so many today is that we've allowed sugar to, in effect, displace some other ingredients that we've tried to reduce. And as a consequence, we're consuming way too much. And it's not just breakfast cereals. It's not just candy bars, granola bars, what have you. It's a food in almost everywhere.
Like, I mean, ketchup. Isn't ketchup like the first ingredients is usually corn syrup or sugar?
Yeah.
Yes,
like, not tomatoes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ketchup, almost all the ketchups we looked at had added sugars in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, just from the standpoint of asking basic questions, this is going to be a very valuable database and a very valuable tool for people as they shop. People are starting to, we've had millions and millions of searches on the site already through the app and directly on computers. And we've had lots of reaction from consumers saying this is now how I go about my shopping. And we're going to be putting out some additional capabilities, some functionality to the app and the database so you can prepare your shopping list. You can keep track of the foods you like to buy, you're fond of. And so forth. So we really feel, and eventually maybe some recipes, add that functionality. So we're really hoping that this can be a tool that people can use for a lot of their culinary needs.
Well, okay, so what I was going towards before was this transparency thing you mentioned and about the reaction. And obviously people, millions of people are using it, and how many people will be motivated to say to manufacturers, hey, you know, I liked your product, but I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will kind of have an effect, a positive effect. I mean, I'm sure that's what's going to happen on these manufacturers that are sort of getting away with all these additives that we don't need and shouldn't have.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. And people, you know, they'll get a choice.
Yeah, exactly. And people
just
vote with
you,
their.
Give you an example, you know. So I typed in Doritos.
I can't even imagine what that looks like.
Super Bowl. Time,
Wait a minute! I cannot believe you just said that, and I have to tell you why. Because just before I was playing with the app, and I typed in Doritos because I couldn't think of
GDESP.
It is. It's GDESP. Yeah. Sorry, I just couldn't believe that you said Doritos, and that's.
Well, there we are. Well, you know, here we are at the Super Bowl time, and
I guess maybe that's it.
You know, everyone's, and of course we're not here to tell people how to eat. We're not here to shame people or anything. I mean, we want people to use this as a tool, and I've had more than a few Doritos in my hand, in my time, right? And my little boy, I have to kind of keep him away from them.
Green Diva confession,
All the ingredients in these Doritos gives them a pretty poor score. Than, you know, the many varieties that they come in our database, and they're not very good nutritionally. No surprise there.
I wonder if they could actually could the Doritos break the app? Because the score is so bad.
just too many ingredients to list
like
on the
page. Like it just explodes.
Well, there's some products that really probably do strain the system in that regard. But, you know, so here you are coming into Super Bowl. You want to have a party with all your friends. Just think about something different than Doritos as you do that.
You could turn it into an app party.
Yes, and, that's right.
You know, guess what food score you're going to get. I think
exactly
that's great. And what I'm noticing on your website, too, is that if you donate to EWG, you get a one-of-a-kind cookbook with tips and recipes.
Great, we have one of the wonderful, talented people on our staff put that together, Ashley McCormick. It's called EWG Eats. And we have some fantastic recipes from you know, Michael Pollan and Mark Bittman and, Alice Waters, a whole bunch of people, Nora Puyon.
Wow.
And we've been really excited to offer that to people, and it helps us a little bit with respect to fundraising. And for all of those reasons, we're finding that food is a way to talk to people about the environment, and the environment's a great way to talk to people about food.
Yeah.
So we're very excited about this new product, this new app. It's, again, available for both the Apple ecosystem and also for Android. And then, you know, if you prefer, just before you head off to the store, you can you can go onto your computer at home and or at the office and search it that way as well.
Now, I have one question, and that is about GMOs, which I know is huge. It's not probably... that deserves its own app and show, you know.
right.
But in terms of this food score app, how are GMOs handled in there, and is there any consideration for non-GMO?
Well, there's no consideration in the score per se. We didn't really know how to score it because there's a debate about whether we have enough evidence to demonstrate health issues with GMOs. But we know it's a critically important right of consumers to know if the food they're eating has GMOs. So we do in the database. We note if it is organic, and of course GMOs aren't allowed in organic. We also note if it's a certified non-GMO by the non-GMO project. And then we also list for foods that we know have corn in them or other ingredients that generally originate in crops that have been genetically engineered and are prevalent in agriculture. We will make a note of that. So you'll say something to the effect likely to contain ingredients that are derived from genetically engineered food.
I was thinking about Doritos, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yep,
you know, that's exactly probably not organic corn in there.
Yeah, that's probably right. And so we say in here that it's not organic. We make that pretty clear.
Yeah.
And we also note all the synthetic food dyes. It has ingredient flavors.
Yeah.
And so forth. So, we tend to make note of that.
Wow.
I love it.
Well, I appreciate all the work you're doing.
I do too.
Loving this app. Yeah, Lynn's, we're both big fans, Ken.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And stick with it because we think the app as you see it now will probably be, we hope significantly improved and made even more useful for people as the years wear on, we want to keep it up to date, and we want to make it as relevant as we can possibly make it. So when new science breaks, when new news comes out about ingredients that maybe are no longer allowed in Europe, for example, or something like that, we will use the food database to evaluate that
and
publish information.
Well, I have no doubt that things will all get more interesting and evolve as more information comes, because you guys are on top of it, man.
Well, thank you so much. That's our aim.
Thanks, Ken. I hope we get to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ken.
Me too. Me too. Thanks again for having me on the show.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.